Hello, everyone. These are certainly strange times, aren't they? As I sit here recording what I'm about to say, country is currently dealing with the fallout from coronavirus pandemic. And like many of you, you know, we're probably quarantined or self-quarantining or social distancing. Isn't that a different thing? You know, social distancing. It's kind of an interesting phrase that's going to be in dictionaries now. Either way, certainly giving everyone a lot more time than they probably had previously. And that's why I'm sitting here right now recording a podcast. Because with all the different things going on related to the coronavirus, there's less patients to treat at the current time. As I sit here recording this, the state of California is under a statewide shelter-in-place order from the governor, and our county in California, the city that I live in is Chico, our county has just announced that we have our first positive case of a patient infected with coronavirus, which I think is probably, I don't know what phrase I'm trying to think of, but it's probably been here for a while. It's just we haven't been able to do the testing that we probably needed to. So it's not exactly news to me or to many other people in this city right now. So I'm not sure what it's like for all of you out there, but it definitely has the ability to be scary, but I think it's the reaction to everything that's creating more fear than the actual disease itself at this point. But that's neither here nor there, because this podcast, the one I'm about to record and you're about to hear, I wanted to do a while ago, actually, and I'm not sure what to call it yet, but basically it's going to be advice for taking advanced certification examinations. And, you know, where did that come from? I think I have a little bit of credibility for it because, one, I myself have gone through two advanced certifications where there were written and oral practical examinations for each, and I've also served as an examiner a couple of times for the Institute of Physical Art in their certification of functional manual therapy. So I may not be the most experienced, but I think the advice I have is very sound, and I hope that you all will enjoy it because I think it's very important. A little bit more about me, if you're not familiar with me, is that after graduating from graduate school, I went through a residency program for 2 years. At the time, was accredited by the APTA, and that was for the Institute of Physical Art. And basically, I got direct mentoring for all of the coursework, for all of the curriculum in the Institute of Physical Art. So that by the time I actually went and did the advanced certification, I had a lot of direct one-on-one mentoring from my mentor, Tim Krunk, and I felt pretty proficient in all of those things. So I get through the CFMT process, and then I go through all the fellowship training in Steamboat Springs through the Institute of Physical Art. And again, direct one-on-one mentoring to not only develop a lot of incredible skill for the curriculum in the IPA, but things beyond that as well. But after the fellowship program, I also went and invested my personal time and money to go through North American Institute of Orthopedic Manual Therapy and their curriculum. You might be familiar with them. I call them NIOMT. I think everybody else calls them that too, instead of saying all those words every time you refer to them. But I tend to call that the more traditional route, to be honest, because a lot of people, especially in the past, aren't going to have the ability to go and do a residency or a fellowship. So the quote-unquote traditional route would be you're working, you're going, and you're taking these seminars that could be anywhere from 2 days to 4 days, and yeah, you're having to learn how to integrate that material and study, you know, frequently on your own, because there's very little accountability. You have to do it all on your own. So I feel like I've learned to do both, from direct mentoring to going at it alone and figuring out how to do it for yourself and what works best for you. So some of the advice that I'm going to give is from those two experiences. Now, where to start? If we're talking about someone who just wants to get an advanced certification, but they're not sure where to go, who to go with, what organization to do all this through. In general, well, let me back up. I also want to say that some of this advice also comes from my friends and mentors along the way. So this is not all just me. Some of these things I've heard and I'm passing on as well. Others I did kind of formulate on my own. So going back to what I was talking about, where to start, you know, how to find something that works for you. To me, if you're not sure where you want to go or what organization's curriculum that you want to go with, you know, do your homework, obviously. Look into different organizations and what they teach, what their paradigms are, how many classes they teach, the cost, all those kind of things, what their advanced certifications look like. And that might narrow it down pretty quick, because honestly, some organizations, their curriculum is, I would say, less than robust and not that novel compared to what you might have learned in school. So at that point, to me, why go through all that same stuff if you've already kind of been taught it in your entry-level program? So that was one of the things about Institute of Physical Art that attracted me, was that it was very different than what I learned in school. And it's also something else that attracted me to NIOP's curriculum, because the level of knowledge and skill and clinical reasoning that I've been exposed to through NIOP graduates or just faculty overall was astounding. So that also was something that I really wanted to look for. So anyway, once you kind of do your own research and narrow down a couple of different, maybe two, three organizations that interest you, you know, my advice and some advice that I was given or that I've heard given to other people is to take some courses from each one, you know, take some seminars, find something about each organization through trial and error, basically. You want to see what you like, what you don't like, and realize that this is a small sample. You're not going to fully understand everything just from taking one course. But at least you have an idea. And then if something in particular resonates with you, then choose that organization and go down that rabbit hole. Work through their curriculum, take all their seminars, work with their curriculum, and that way, at least by the time, you know, you're working your way through that, you'll learn a system, a paradigm, a way of treating patients and assessing patients, and you're going to be really proficient as you work within that system, and you're going to be really effective in getting results with your patients. So to me, that is the first step. What goes on in your homework phase and kind of gathering data, and then your sampling, and then once you find something that you think really works well with you, you start in that organization and their paradigm and their curriculum, and that way you can really start gaining a lot of skill in a relatively short amount of time just because you're putting in that effort. Now, as time goes on, you really want to start looking elsewhere outside of that organization, and maybe, you know, if you narrow down your initial process to two or three different curriculums, two or three different organizations, and you go down the rabbit hole of one, as time goes on, maybe you start taking some other courses within those other one or two. And the reason for doing that is to start filling in some gaps, improve your skills in some other areas where the original certification or original organization didn't have. So I think you just want to be more well-rounded, and you can't just only go through one treatment philosophy or paradigm or organization and hopefully be as highly skilled as you could be if you, you know, went through some other things as well. So that's my first step, I think, is figure out what you like and then go through it. You know, go do it. Spend your time, spend your money, get that training through the seminars that the organization has. So now you've started down that rabbit hole and you're continuing to take courses, you're doing all the seminars, but you're not really finished yet through the curriculum. You're kind of in the middle. You know, you've taken some, but you have several left to go. So after taking a course, my advice, and something I've heard from a lot of other people as well, is to spend time. Sometimes spend more time, sometimes you spend less time, but to spend time with all your patients in a given day or a given week, reviewing the information and the skills that you learned after each course or after each seminar. So what does that mean? Say you take a course that, you know, just pick a topic like, you know, lumbar spine, lumbopelvic girdle. You went and took a course. You've learned some different skills or assessments or just knowledge in general. Go back into the clinic, and with almost every patient on your schedule the next day, the next week, the next month, practice something from the course. So if we're talking about lumbar spine, it could just be practicing, you know, PIVMs. It could be practicing just palpation. That doesn't mean every patient you see is a lumbar spine patient, but, you know, patients appreciate when their clinician is seeking a higher level of skill. So it doesn't matter if you're treating them for hammer toe or plantar fasciitis or a headache. Just say, hey, you know, I wanted to know if I could just practice something for a minute or two at the end of our session. You know, don't take up their time fiddling around and spending 10 minutes, you know, wading through something that you're not quite sure how to do. Take just a couple of minutes, practice a skill, and then move on. And that way, you're not wasting their time, but you're also gaining skill in the meantime for you. And also, you're learning to be a little bit faster because you don't have the time. You can't be wasting time with that patient. So think of that as trying to ingrain knowledge and skills kind of in the back of your head, into your subconscious, so that as time goes on, it's going to take less and less effort to either recall information or to perform a skill. But at that same time, you're not doing this in a sloppy manner. You know, as time goes on and you're gaining that skill, or you're getting a lot faster in recalling information, you want to be able to do those things very skillfully. So maybe that has more to do with psychomotor skill than just recalling information, but you want to be very artful. So as time goes on and you're able to do things better, and hopefully you have some self-awareness to know when you are doing them better, you want to be very, you know, critiquing of yourself to say, am I doing this as good as I could? You know, what can I refine? What can I get better with? Because I don't care who you are, we can all be better in the clinic with what we do and more artful with what we do day in and day out. Nobody's perfect. Now, say that you've gone through the curriculum of said organization and you really like what you're learning and you've really started practicing all the skills from each individual seminar, each individual course. You're getting better. You're really doing better in the clinic with your patients. And you've already said that, yes, I'm going to do this advanced certification. You know, I've gotten done with all the courses and it's coming up. You know, maybe it's within a year, maybe it's a couple of years out, who knows. So now is the time that you really want to get good at integrating the material. You're less worried now about, you know, just practicing the skills and learning how to do said skill versus anything else in the clinic. You've already done that. So now you want to get really good at integrating everything together so that you become a more complete therapist within this paradigm. So most organizations create their curriculum with a kind of hierarchy in mind. You have the more basic material, the more basic courses that are taught early on, and there are prerequisites for taking the more advanced material. And those things are taught in later courses. So you can't get to those without taking the basic courses first. So even though this material and information in the course may seem very basic, and sometimes it might be a little redundant from what you were taught in school, it doesn't seem as quite as fun as all the hot, sexy stuff from more advanced material. It's still very important. I don't really know how to say it other than that. You know, the more experienced, the more seasoned and highly skilled clinicians that I've run into, the more they are that way. I believe they would agree with me on this. When I say that the basic information and skills are used day in and day out for those higher level clinicians, I'm not kidding. So the stuff that's taught early on in curriculum of these organizations, there's a reason for it, because it's very, very, very important. It's not just there just to be there. It's because that's what is probably used most often. So especially when we're talking about concepts, not just knowledge, but specific concepts or skills practice. So that's one thing, you know, that you definitely use those more and more throughout every day and every week. And the advanced material, the advanced skills, the advanced techniques, you probably use only occasionally throughout a week. So that's one thing. So for the betterment of your patients and the betterment of you, don't take the basic stuff lightly. Anyway, that's just, yeah, I digress. So anyway, you have the certification off in the distance. Meaning, like I said, it could be about a year, it could be more than a year. Either way, you've gone through all the curriculum, you've already signed up, you're ready to take the certification exam, so to speak, but you still need to do a lot better with how you integrate things in the clinic. So I've heard some people say that after you take a course, you take each course material and you practice all of that material for weeks or a month, and you rotate through the material as time goes on. So say that, you know, you go and you take a course. For the Institute of Physical Art, you could say you've taken an FM1 course. And you go back to the clinic and you practice all the things in that course over the next month on your patients. So that's one way of doing it. It's not exactly, to me, the best way. So from what I said before, you should have already been doing some of that in the beginning, you know, as you're going through each coursework. To me, now is not the time just to keep doing the same thing. Now I want to step up to a higher level in order to work on these things, in order to train before I get to the examination. Like I said, you know, I've gone through two very rigorous examinations for advanced certifications, and I've also been an examiner for a couple of years, and I think you can do something that's more effective. And what is it? One of the things that I can tell you when I was being an examiner is the people doing the examining for the oral practical things, they want to see not just what you know for each course or level of courses, but we want to see how well has this person actually integrated this approach, this paradigm, into their daily practice. And to be honest with all of you, it is very apparent when someone knows these things inside and out, because they put in the time to really integrate everything for them, and they figured out what works for them and how to make it work. Other clinicians, other people coming in, taking an oral practical exam or advanced certification, they may be decent with the technique, but I mean, you can really tell they haven't fully immersed themselves into whatever approach or whatever paradigm they're testing for. So my suggestion is this. Begin by thinking and actually writing down, handwriting, not just typing on a computer, but handwriting for each patient of every day, something from each course, each level of coursework, and write out how you would have used it on that patient. So that can become a kind of a daunting task depending on how many patients you and your clinic might see in a day. But for example, say you have, let's just pick a round number, 10 patients in a day, day in, day out. So you're going to have to, again, do some homework outside of the clinic. But for each patient, go down and at home or in the clinic, write down for each patient something that you would use that, you know, should be appropriate. Don't just write down some random stuff, but something that you would use for that patient from each course or level of coursework for that day. Now, when you do that, you really have to think about the material that's taught in each course and, okay, if I only had one treatment slot for this patient, how am I going to do all these things together? And why would I be doing all these things together? So if you have a patient with a shoulder problem, or they're coming in for shoulder pain, you probably wouldn't be doing some techniques for their ankle. But there should be something from each course, more or less, that you could do for that patient. So it could be that, you know, yeah, you have a patient with shoulder pain and you're going through rehab. Well, you're going to be working on the shoulder itself. You might also be doing something with their elbow. You might also be doing something with their neck or head or rib cage or upper thoracic spine or even their mid and lower thoracic spine. You might even be working on their lumbar spine and pelvic girdle, or say they have a specific task they want to do. So you need to look at that task. Okay, well, how does the lumbar spine or a pelvic girdle impact that specific task? Maybe they need something done there. So all these different things, you can't just say, okay, well, it's a shoulder patient. Well, I can't do anything else other than the shoulder, because that's being very nearsighted. Or is it farsighted? I can't ever get those two straight. Anyway, what you're trying to do is mental reps, basically, because like I said, you're writing this stuff down. So it doesn't matter if you have only half an hour or if you have an hour or however much time with each patient, you're doing mental reps. Right now, this is just a mental prep phase of sorts. You're going through each patient and you're just trying to organize material in your head. And as time goes on and you're kind of getting the hang of it, you can start doing that actually in the clinic in the specific treatment session with the patient. Now, don't try and do this on a day for every single patient that walks through the door at that point. So in our little listing of things here, step one is going to be you're writing down everything you would do for that patient from each coursework, each level of coursework, and you're doing that for every patient in a given day. Now, you can do this for a whole week load of patients and what you would do from each coursework, and that'd be totally fine because remember, you're just writing this down right now. So step one, write it down and organize your thoughts. You're doing some mental organization here. Over time, you start working that into each treatment session with your patients. So step two is pick a patient, you know, and try and do those things that you wrote down in the clinic. And like I said, obviously, some things are going to take priority over others, but stay the course. Stick to the plan. Because what that's going to do is it's going to force you to do all the things that you listed out, and it's going to force you to be fast. You have to be fast if you're going to get through all these things. And so, like I said, some things are going to take priority over others. So it may be you spend less time doing one thing and more on the other. But you've got to learn to be efficient with all of these things. So step two is you're actually going to pick a patient and you're going to take something from each course seminar that you wrote down and use it for that patient in a treatment session. And as time goes on, you do it for another person, and then you do it for another person, and another, and another, and another, so that you're going through the mental process of writing it down, organizing your thoughts ahead of time, and then you go in, and you do all those things on the patient. And then you can come back and debrief and figure out, okay, what went well, what would I do different, and go back and write down what you would do the next time. And like I said, this is pretty far off in the distance from when you actually are taking your certification exam. So you have plenty of time to work on this. It doesn't have to be perfect right away, nor should it be. You should bumble your way through a few things. That should be expected. But as time goes on, what you're doing is you're organizing your thoughts, and you're actually performing the skills next physically in order to integrate everything together. Then you really start to understand how things work together in the curriculum, in the paradigm. So the more and more you do this, you start to master the material. I say that in quotations. You start to master the material, and what you can do with that paradigm and that treatment approach grows and grows and grows, so that by the time the exam comes around, all of those things will be evident to the examiner. It won't just be like, I mean, yeah, they did the technique okay, but I don't really think they're using this in the clinic that much. By the time the exam comes around and we as examiners are looking at you and talking with you and interacting with you, the reaction is more like, wow, they really know their stuff. So that's one of my advice for, you know, getting into the process of preparation, really. This is still prep phase, but this is really, really, really important and for people to understand how to integrate everything together. And I keep coming back to that phrase, integration, because you want to, if you want to be really good at something, you have to understand how things work together. And for a treatment approach or for a coursework, just again, for example, Institute of Physical Art, IPA, they have all these different courses, and each one doesn't just stand alone. I mean, they could, and you could be a better clinician for it, but each one mingles together, each one integrates together. And everything works around each other to create the most optimal and efficient patient function that you can. So to be, you know, a master at anything, you've got to learn how things work inside and out, front, back, spin it around, turn it upside down, and you still have to understand how things work together. And all this can seem a daunting task when you're first taking a course. So that's why I say, you know, in the beginning, after you take a course, you're just practicing the skills. After you've taken all those courses and you've gone through that phase, this phase is about integration and making things come together. So you've done that work. You've gone through all that process, the prep phase. Now the time is here. You're about to go and do that examination. At this point, you should have put in all the effort ahead of time so that you can just go there and perform. Perform like you would in the clinic. Because that, honestly, as an examiner, that's what we want to see. We don't want to hear you talk about what you would do. We want to see what you would do. We want to witness you doing it. So that's we're not talking about theory at this point. We need to see how you would do everything day in and day out in the clinic. Now, having said that, this is, so we're assuming now that you've done all the necessary work ahead of time. This isn't the time to cram. I'm not going to talk about that. Last minute advice for cramming and you know, little tricks for that. No, you should have been an adult and you should have put in the homework ahead of time before you even got to this phase. Anyway, now we're at the point where you're about to take the examination. It is right in front of you. Having said all those things, now is not the time to deviate from your usual habits. What do I mean by that? For example, if you travel to a destination and will spend a few days there before the exam begins, keep up your usual habits. So, for example, the CFMT process with the IPA, their examination is in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Pretty much everybody who's taking the exam doesn't live in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. So you got to travel. And what do I mean by keeping up your usual habits? Well, if you travel to a destination and you're going to spend a few days there before the exam begins, keep going. Keep doing the same stuff. Wake up at the same time. Go to bed at the same time. Now, given depending on the time zone you're from, maybe you need to adjust some of that, because if you live on the East Coast and you're coming and you're changing like two time zones, maybe you fly there or travel there sooner and spend more time there to get acclimated. If you normally eat breakfast, don't skip it. If you don't eat breakfast, then now is not the time to skip it. This is now also not the time for nervous eating, so don't start cramming things into your mouth just because you're nervous and anxious. Eat the same things that you would normally eat, if you can. So go to the grocery store. Dine in restaurants that you're used to their food. So don't be adventurous and try something new on the off chance that it makes you sick or your body doesn't react well to it. Don't try some fad diet or lifestyle now, because if you do and your body reacts in a weird way, your brain is not going to work the same as when you were back home. If you, however much you normally exercise, keep doing that. If you exercise every day, now's not the time to take a week off. You need to do some kind of exercise every day. And also, the week or two before the exam process is not the time to go for that deadlift PR. So don't, you know, and my advice is, you know, don't go through and change what you normally do right ahead of the time of the course or the week, or excuse me, the exam or the week of the exam. If you normally drink coffee or caffeinated drinks, keep doing it. You don't want a withdrawal headache or other things to kick in while you're studying, and especially not actually during the exam. Also, if you're used to studying in a group or with other friends or other people taking the exam, you happen to live around a bunch of people who are taking the exam, keep doing that. If you like studying in a group and it's worked well for you, and you're at the exam, especially with other people you've been studying with, then keep doing it. If you like to study alone, if that works best for you, for damn sure, don't start studying with other people now. Because if you do, it will frustrate you somehow. They will either, the people that you're trying to study with will either A, know things a lot better than you, and they're going to really ramp up your anxiety, or B, they're going to frustrate you because you want to move on to something else and they don't want to. And you could maybe consider yourself more well-prepared than them, and yeah, they're slowing you down. So hopefully you get my point. Whatever you've been doing to this point in your preparation, keep doing it. Some of this may sound very callous, and I admit it probably is. But honestly, this is not the time to make friends. This is not the time to worry about what others think of you. this is business. You are traveling, you are spending your money and your time to achieve this goal that you've wanted for X number of months or years. This is business time. It's time to accomplish that goal that you've set for yourself and you've been wanting for so long, and you spent so much time and so much money of your own. And I mean, I haven't even mentioned, you know, the sacrifices that you're doing for this instead of spending time with family and other things. But all this stuff that's leading up to it, don't mess it up. This is business. Like I said, don't mess it up because you're worried about what others might think of you. This is time to go and perform and to continue the things that you've been doing. So if you deviate now, chances are it's not going to work out the best. So you've got to the part where it's like the week of, you've traveled there, you're going in and you're really doing your last minute stuff before you actually do the examination. Now you're actually in the exam. You're in front of the examiner. You're staring at a piece of paper which is telling you to do this or that. Now, I like this phrase, now is not the time to shit the bed. Remain calm, for goodness sakes. Go to your happy place, meditate, do whatever you need to do. There's another phrase I like that I heard somewhere, to keep your poop in a group. So obviously some of that has to do with, you know, not actually being in front of an examiner and having a piece of paper that you're reading that is telling you to do this X, Y, or Z. This may be in between oral practical and written, or it may be between written and oral practical, or it may be between two or three different oral practicals. But like I was saying, do something that works for you mentally to help keep you calm. And maybe that's something that you've already practiced or you've already thought of or you already worked on yourself at home in all of your prep phases before you actually make it to this point. Because you don't want to be in this position where you're in between exams or you're in front of a tester and you're trying to figure out how to calm yourself down. You should have already been doing that already. Like I said, that's kind of redundant. Anyway, remember, if you are prepared well enough to this point, it's just like being in the clinic. You just do what you do. You just perform. So as you're in front of an examiner or you're actually taking a written test, do not assume anything. Remember what assuming does? It makes an ass out of you and me, if you haven't heard that before. So if you need to clarify something, ask the question. Talk to the proctor, talk to the examiner. They won't think less than you. They won't think less of you, no matter how silly of a question you may think it is. If they can answer you, they will. If they can't, it's probably because they can't elaborate much more without giving away the information that they want. So just accept it and think about something different. So you're in the exam. You're actually in front of an examiner in an oral practical. Like I said, this is your time to just perform and to do what you normally do in the clinic. So if you've done all of your preparation, like I've talked about earlier, you have no issue at this point because you're just doing what you've done day in and day out and you're answering their questions. And because you know the material and you've integrated it so well, when they're asking you a question, don't stop doing what you're doing and turn and talk to them. Keep practicing, keep doing your technique, keep doing whatever, and talk to them. Say all the things that you need to say. If they ask you a question, say, oh, I would do this, this, and this. And actually, I'd probably use this specific thing from this other course on this particular patient, you know, to make sure that they receive their, you know, the best treatment possible and to make them more efficient as a patient or more efficient with this task or whatever. Also, in a live practical examination, if you're talking or demonstrating a technique and the examiner in front of you asks you something like, okay, great, would you do anything else? Or how would you do that differently? You should probably figure out something else to do and figure it out rather quickly. And it not that you're doing anything wrong or bad. Maybe they just want to see how much you know. So don't worry. You know, if somebody's asking you those things, you might be doing great. They just want to see, you know, exactly how much does this person know? You know, or they may be trying to give you bonus points because you are sailing through everything and they've got to find something else to keep you there and demonstrate how good you are. But like I said, you know, don't worry. And I should have said yet. If the examiner keeps repeating those kind of phrases to you, maybe wording it a little differently each time, then that should send off a slight alarm in your brain, because at that point they're searching for something and you haven't given it to them yet. Whether that's information or you haven't shown them a skill that they want to see yet, they're trying to dig that out of you. So for goodness sakes, don't keep saying the same thing. Don't keep repeating the same thing. Don't keep doing the same thing, because it ain't working. They're trying to find out something else. And if you're racking your brain and you can't come up with something else, in my experience, just say so. Just say, sorry, I'm having a brain fart. I can't think of it. Because the longer you take, the longer you bumble through things, it's less opportunity for you to earn points elsewhere, honestly. So if you're not going to get it anyway, just admit it and move on. You know, maybe there's something else that you can do to gain some of those points. So you've gone through, you've done all the prep phase, you've gotten to the point where the exam is imminently in front of you, then you've taken the exam. Hey, congratulations, you're done at this point. So go have a drink, take a nap, take a hike, go exercise, whatever helps you decompress in a healthy way, by the way, I should say. Then go do it, because you know what? You've done a whole lot of things up to this point. Now's not the time to sit and worry about everything that just happened, you know, what you would do different. It's over. It's done. And you know, it's easy for me to say that because that's kind of my personality. For other people, that may not be your personality, but as best I can relate it, you know, it's over. Just let it be. So going back to being done with everything, as you know, having been an examiner and having experienced many other examiners throughout my time, in my opinion, a good examiner will guide you through the examination process and give you very little information in terms of body language, facial expression, verbal communication, and such that would actually tip you off as to whether you're doing well or not so well. So what do I mean by that? It doesn't mean that they're a stone wall or a stone face and they're very stoic and just not interactive with you at all. I don't mean that at all, because I mean, that's not why we're there. We're there because we love to be there and we like helping other people as an examiner. What I mean by that is all those things, facial expression, body language, how we communicate with you, it shouldn't tip off how well you're doing or how well you're not doing. To me, if I've done my job well enough, the person taking the exam almost has no clue how well or how poor they did. And why do I even say that? Because if you're doing well, I want to know just how much knowledge or skill you have. So I'm going to push you. I'm going to take you down rabbit holes if you're doing that well and try and find out the depth and breadth of your knowledge. If you're not doing well, I'm trying to guide you through everything in order to see what you do know or what skills you do have. So in order to get through all the things that I need to see as an examiner, I may have to move you along and get through it in that way. So don't freak out during or after the exam, depending on how well you think you did or how well you think you're doing. Because honestly, you could have no idea. And we've had people in exams say exactly that. I thought I did really well in this one, but my grade didn't reflect it. Or man, I thought I bombed that one and actually did okay. Now, you have to have a very short memory, and you have to have the ability to detach from one moment to the next. And like I said, some personalities may be more relatable to that or more good at that than others, but you need to be able to do that if you're going to do your best in an exam. Because, excuse me, you can go through a written examination and feel like you did great and you're floating on cloud nine and you have to walk right into an oral practical. And now you're much less confident because the examiner is asking you things and you're like, oh, shoot, I'm not giving them something. You know, you can't keep stumbling along and then go right back to either a written examination or go right back into another room for a different oral practical. And you can't have this roller coaster of emotions. It pays to be, you know, even keeled. And how, like I said, have a short memory. Stay in the moment. So if you came out of one, you didn't think you did that great, you cannot let that influence the next one. Me as an examiner, I've seen people, and I've witnessed people as the person taking the exam, go from one place to the next, and honestly, they let what happened in the room before affect how well they did with me. And I really hate that because, especially if you know the individual or have an idea from seeing them in courses, you know what they can do and you know their potential and they just don't perform. And some of that could be because they let the anxiety get to them. So don't let that happen. I can even relate to my own experience taking CFMT examination between two particular courses and their exams. In one, I thought I actually didn't do that bad. And I got my grade back and went, wow, I actually thought I did a lot better than this. I don't quite know what happened, but obviously I didn't do as good as I thought. And another one, I didn't think I did very well in. I actually got a very good grade in it. So go figure. Like I said, if your examiner is doing their job, you probably don't have a very good idea or understanding of how well you're doing. Because either way, they've got to get through the material and they've got to get the things that they need to see out of you. And like I said, if you're doing great, they're going to push you, or they should, in my opinion. And if you're not doing that great, then they're still guiding you through the process to know, to figure out just how much you know. So anyway, to recap, if you're swimming out in the middle of an ocean, you're not sure which direction to go, first advice is to do your legwork, do your homework, and find 2-3 organizations that look good on paper. And then go take some of their courses. Take one, take two, you know, may take a handful of courses till you really figure out what you like the most. And then once you do, take all those courses. Go through their curriculum. And that way you're at least going to be proficient by the end of it at something. And you're going to be a lot better, hopefully. And your patients are going to do a lot better, hopefully. Along the way, as you take some of those courses, you take a course, you come back to the clinic, and you're practicing those skills. You're going over that information with almost every patient that walks in the door. And like I said, it doesn't have to be you have the notebook out and you're going through every single thing with one particular patient. It could be. But more than likely, every patient that walks in your door is not going to be the same exact diagnosis. So you're taking a particular thing, or you're taking a small amount of information or just one or two skills from each course, and you're practicing that on every patient, and you're not taking a lot of time for this. You're, you know, a few minutes at the end of a treatment session, tell the patient, and they've given their okay, and you know, then you go ahead. As time goes on, you've done that through all the curriculum, all the material through each course, so that by now you should be fairly skilled with what you're doing on those things. Now you have the examination off in the distance, so it could be several months, it could be a year or more. Now's the time to learn how to integrate things and master things and put things together. So now you have to do some mental homework where you're going to go and write things down that you would do with every patient on your schedule that takes something from each seminar, each course, each level of material that you're using with each of these patients. So you've written it down, you wrote down everything. Now you're going to go back into the clinic and you're going to pick one of those patients and you're going to do everything that you wrote down with that patient in a treatment session so that you learn how to be not just skillful, because you've already learned to get that skill. Now you're learning to be fast, and now you're learning how well things integrate together. Because if something worked great, then write that down. Write down how well that worked for this particular patient. If things didn't work as well as you want, write down why, if you understand why, or write down what you might want to do different next time. And then when you go and do that different thing, see how well it worked. If it worked better than what you did before, now you've created something in your head. You go, wow, that combination of things really worked well, but this other thing didn't for that particular patient. So like I said, now you're learning how to integrate things and you're gaining a level of mastery that you may not have otherwise. So you've gone through all the prep work. The exam is right in front of you. It's a week or two out. Now is not the time to do something different with your normal everyday process. Stay the course. Do what you normally do day in, day out. Like I said, wake up and go to bed at the same time. If you exercise, keep doing that. Eat the same foods. If you don't exercise, then keep doing that. You know, do what you do. Now is not the time to do something different. And like we also talked about, if you're at the exam itself, or you're, you know, a couple of days out and you're just reviewing material, you're still studying, keep doing the same thing. You know, if you like studying in a group, do that. If you like studying alone, do that. Now is not the time, like I said, to try and you know, be friends with everybody. There is a time and place for that. Don't get me wrong. But now is not the time to worry about what others think of you. It is business time. Take care of business. Once you're done with that, then you can have a ball and be the most sociable person you can think of. But until that time, do what you need to do to perform the way you want to perform. Now, as you're going through and you're actually in the exam, you know, try and remain calm. Practice some different strategies before you get to this point to know what helps you stay calm. And then as you're in the exam and you're talking, you know, with the examiner or other things, make sure that you're staying even-keeled, you're staying level-headed, because you may be doing great, but you may not know it just based on what the examiner is trying to get out of you. Or hey, you may not be doing that great, and you may not know it because the examiner is guiding you through everything, and that's totally fine. Don't let it bother you. Just keep performing, keep doing what you would do in the clinic. And if you've done what you're supposed to do up to this point, then odds are you're going to be fine. So that's my advice. You've wanted to gain an advanced certification. How best to do that? How best to go about it? What are the strategies that you can employ? Those are the things that I think would be most helpful. However, I fully acknowledge that they may not work for everybody. And some of you may be listening to this and saying, this dude is nuts. I would never do those things. And that's fine. If you know what works best for you, then by all means, please do it. If you do have differing opinions, honestly, I would love to hear them. So please share. You can share them on comments of the website. You can share them on reviews on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. You can share them on Facebook pages or Instagram. Otherwise, you know, please share what you have. You know, we all get better from it if you do something different. Anyway, thank you guys for making it this far. If you have any questions, please go through those different avenues that I just mentioned and list them out, or email me. My contact information is on the website. You can always email me. And yeah, thank you all for listening. I hope this was helpful to you. If not, then hopefully there's something else that you do better. If it was, again, I love feedback. Let me know. I appreciate that. Either way, thank you all. Hope you stay safe out there, stay healthy, and we'll talk to you again soon.